Hey everybody, and welcome to a brand new episode. It's a bonus episode of Retro Raw, because we're not actually reviewing an episode of Raw is War, or Monday Night Raw, or whatever it's called. I'm Kenny McIntosh, I'm here with Sondra, and Sondra, today, grab your cocktails, we're going back to Friday night's main event.
Oh, we sure are. And you know what? Cards on the table. This is the Retro Raw rundown, not the Retro Friday Night's main event rundown. So when I was watching Friday Night's main event, which I did do, I thought, you know what? I think I'm going to put in about as much effort as WWE put into producing Friday Night's main event. So what I did was I got fairly drunk and didn't take any notes except for the drunken text I was sending you about Crush's headband.
Mm-hmm. Accurate.
And that's about it. So I don't necessarily remember all of Friday Night's main, because this was a few nights ago as well. So we'll see how much I actually remember of this show. But oh boy, was this a shit show. I don't understand. If you're going to preempt Raw, why wouldn't you just do another Raw broadcast? Why would you do Friday Night's main event, which was like half recaps? Why? I mean, I feel like they were just encouraging me to drink. Their logo was a martini glass for some reason. I don't understand why the logo was a martini glass, Kenny. It's wrestling, not go out and drink.
It's a Friday night.
Apparently, but like, shouldn't I be out doing better things on a Friday night than watching fucking Friday night's main event?
This is true. I do have some facts to give to you. The thing was, do you know where this was held? This event?
No.
This was held in the same building as Money in the Bank 2011. This was in Chicago.
This was at the... Oh my goodness.
This was in the same building that we watched WrestleMania 13.
I mean, it's the same building where I saw Backlash too. So
I mean, I wouldn't be screaming from the rooftops about that one, but yeah, you're correct. you did see that. But the idea was that in the late 90s, they don't do it anymore, but like WWF used to get preempted for either the US Open, the tennis, or the Westminster Dog Show. So what they did here was on, I think it was August 23rd, so the day after, I think it was August 23rd they taped this, that they taped 2 weeks worth of what would be known as Friday Night's Main Event. So Friday Night's Main Event was put here to sort of be something instead of Raw, and it started at 11 p.m. on a Friday night.
It was supposed to be, is that why they put Bret Hart and Vader on first? Because they knew everyone was going to bed anyway?
Yes, that's why they put Shawn on, then they put Bret and Vader. But the thing with this show was, this show didn't start till 11:45 because Pete Sampras's tennis match went long.
Oh my god!
So this started at 11:45, and oh my god, I mean, can you imagine if you stayed up to 1:30 for this fucking main event?
I did do that, because by the time I acquired the file to watch, it was fairly late at night, and I feel like I got the full Friday night main event experience.
Well, I look forward
you having
to
told
your,
me this.
I look forward to your take on it. So we get, you know, one of the best things about this show was Jim Ross and Jim Cornette in commentary were great together. I thought they were fantastic.
Oh, they were fantastic.
Like Cornette was so good, and like knowing how much Cornette hated Michaels, it's really funny to hear him talk about him and stuff without like saying anything negative about him. So JR and Cornette, I thought they were really good together. They were probably the highlight of it. So we kick off the show with a very weird video package, which is kind of like the Friday Night's main event video package. And then they would do this thing throughout the night where like, they would show you, you know, coming up next or earlier tonight. And then like there would be shapes of people walking past the logo, which was in a television set, which I think was supposed to be in a window.
I don't know what was going on.
I think that was supposed to happen. I don't know why.
None of it makes any sense at all. None of it, even the fonts are terrible on this show, Kenny. Like the weird italicized block fonts underneath everyone when they come out. I don't understand.
I did love the font on the graphics. So Shawn Michaels comes out with a cocktail beside him. You know, irony.
Like they went to all the trouble of rebranding and doing this Friday night's main event show, and it looks like this. Like it's very clearly like, oh shit, we need to throw together Friday night's main event. To word perfect 95.
Now, the other thing about the, so obviously the photo for this podcast, this particular episode, is the logo for Friday night's main event. Now, I know there's supposed to be a cherry in the cocktail glass, but what's the big green circle?
No, it's an olive. It's a martini.
But it doesn't actually make sense. There's a big green dot, green circle with a hole through it, and then there's a tiny olive at the top of it.
Yeah, I'm not super sure what's going on there. Again, Friday night's main event does not make any sense at all.
We've got two of these to review. Two.
I don't have the logo up in front of me, so I can't accurately judge.
I'm gonna send it to you.
Okay.
So that you can... This is great radio. But I'm going to send this over so that Sandra can figure out what this is, what it's supposed to be. Friday night's main event. I do have this somewhere. Come on, Kenny.
I mean, the whole thing was just very baffling.
Okay, it's in your inbox now. So you should have this logo to tell people what is going on.
No, that's just an olive.
Olives are not see-through. What's the green circle?
Well, no, they're
circle?
Not see-through, but it's supposed to be like, the green circle is the olive, because it's supposed to be like a neon sign of a martini glass, so it's just the outline of the olive, because the green circle is the olive, and then the red circle is the pit of the olive. That's just an olive in a martini glass.
No,
but it's supposed to be like a, you know, artistic interpretation of a martini glass. I thought I was going crazy for a second. I was like, there is no cherry.
Okay, so Shawn Michaels kicks off the show. Jim Ross comes out and he brings out the same chair that he beat up The Undertaker with back on Raw 11 days ago. And, you know, he talks about, you know, how, you know, he can't believe now people are saying what he did at SummerSlam is a mistake, which is a fair point because now people are saying that. But then last week he blatantly hit Undertaker with a chair twice. He comes out in jeans, a t-shirt, a waistcoat, sunglasses, and loafers.
It is quite the look, for sure.
He mocks everybody in the WWF who calls himself live wires or guys with bad action and says he's all of those things in the real world. He told the WWF not to push him, and when he did, they got a reaction all over The Undertaker's head, which, you know, sounds a very different thing. Shawn says
it really does.
Shawn says that...
Especially from Shawn Michaels, I mean...
Shawn is gay. Anyway.
so the crowd loves to chant.
He signed his own death warrant after what he did. Shawn says he won't lay down and die for The Undertaker. He says that what he will do is he's going to bring Undertaker down at Ground Zero in a blaze of fire. The people are chatting Shawn is gay. He threatens to come out of the audience to screw all the women to show how straight he is. And then,
was this when he said, ask your mother and your sister, or was that last week?
No, that was last week.
Oh.
But then he says he threatens to put Undertaker away for good with a truck, calls himself the outlaw of the WWF, and promises to dance over the Undertaker's corpse. And then he grabs a woman out of the crowd. Then he shouts something that's bleeped about, don't make me come out there and show you how gay I could be, or something. And then he grabs a woman from the front row.
Something about proving his sexuality, for sure.
Then he brings a woman across the barrier and gives her, like, the most gentle peck on the lips I've ever seen in my life. Which was supposed to be him showing how straight he is. Which basically was like he was kissing his mother.
I mean, I've definitely kissed gay men with more passion than that.
And that's Shawn Michaels in this opening segment. So, what did you think of Shawn Michaels' promo?
He definitely threatened to murder The Undertaker, for one. Like, are we sure that he and Roman Reigns aren't the same person 20 years removed? Because they both seem to, you know, have issues with people booing them and then attempting to murder people with trucks or ambulances. I'm more and more convinced week by week that Shawn Michaels and Roman Reigns are the same person. Shawn comes across as a total prick here. Like, the logic of what he's saying does make sense. I thought the promo was well delivered from what I remember of it. But, I mean, the logic of him getting angry that people are blaming him for screwing The Undertaker and that kind of stuff. Like, I still don't buy Shawn Michaels' argument because he's the one that put himself in the fucking match in the first place. He's the one that was like, Vin Man, make me the guest referee and I only do one match and it's the main event. And it's like, fuck off, Shawn Michaels. So
even though for like 90% of the match, he was a better referee than most 1997 officials.
No, he was 100% better than most of the 1997 officials. But just the fact that, you know, he was the one who inserted himself into that position in the first place. So him blaming everyone for blaming him, there seems to be a lot of blame going around. But I mean, I understand the logic of what he's doing. His heel turn makes sense to me. I think it is definitely a heel turn that's completed at this point. Is it supposed to be like, is he 100% heel now? Because like, I know weeks ago you were saying that he wasn't. He seems like a super prick to me, but he has since he was a babyface, I suppose. But I mean, it was fine. It was standard Shawn Michaels fare. I don't know how excited I am to see Shawn Michaels versus The Undertaker. Not really, if I'm honest, but the logic and the setup makes sense because obviously The Undertaker would want to face Shawn Michaels after getting hit in the head with the chair, after Shawn Michaels counted the three to make Brett champion. So I like the progression of that story. It's just not two performers that I'm really keen to see.
That's fair. We then get a WWF Championship match with Bret Hart against Vader, who's accompanied by Paul Bearer. Vader grabs the mic and says, it's time, throws it to the crowd to say it's Vader time. They're starting to like him. Bret comes out with his flag. Vader just attacks Bret before the bell. He just like starts beating on him. He breaks the Canadian flag again. They then go to the outside. Bret hits him right into the ring steps. Bret's just so good in the ring. So good. He hits a back suplex on Vader, which is insane. They brawl, and Vader goes for a big splash. Then Owen and Davey come out and interfere. They attack Vader, and as they're attacking Vader, Bret puts the ring post figure four on the big man, and that makes the Patriot come down for the save. The Patriot kind of gets rid of Owen and Bulldog. Jim Ross speaks to the Patriot and asks, what's your association with Vader? And he says, there's no association, but I won't just stand by and watch any man be triple teamed, which, well, okay. Patriot.
Not in America.
Not in America. No gangbangs in America. Patriot plans to throw a monkey wrench in Bret Hart's plans at Ground Zero and become the champion. Jim Cornette says that the Patriot is on one of the biggest roles in World Wrestling Federation history. What did you think of this match into the angle with the Patriot and Bret?
I thought the match was fun. Bret Hart versus Vader is always going to be fun, right? Vader's a big monster who's kind of great and kind of way underused, it seems. And I mean, Bret Hart's incredible. So this was a lot of, I was baffled by the fact that it was going on first. Absolutely baffled. Had no idea why this was happening. I was like, shouldn't this be the main event of the show? Especially considering what is the main event of the show. It makes more sense now that I know everyone was just sleeping and no one was watching that anyway. But no, this was really fun. And the whole Patriot thing, like, I'm more intrigued by it than I thought I would be. But the Patriot just, did he not look super out of breath giving this promo?
He did. He had to run down to the ring to stop this.
He did have to run down to the ring to stop this. But like, it seemed like putting a microphone in his face as he's like, you know, and I'm not going to stand by here and watch this. And he just, it looked a little Bush League to me just because like he hadn't just wrestled a big match or anything. He just like ran down and made a save. So I want to like the Patriot, but I just find him not that interesting, I guess. I don't know. Like, I'm more into him than I thought I would be, but nothing about it is screaming like, yeah, Bret Hart versus the Patriot should absolutely be the main event.
I just think the Patriot's in the wrong era. Like, I think that he's a bit too cartoony. Like, he's got a mask. He's like, you know, he's just, America's thrown up on him. Mm-hmm. I think it's just far more interesting. Like, even Vader, you're like, I'd rather see Vader versus Bret Hart at the pay-per-view.
Yeah, I would rather see Vader versus Bret Hart at the pay-per-view. And I have no doubt that Bret Hart versus the Patriot will be a good match. Like, oh, I'm guessing. I don't know. I haven't seen it. But, like, it also doesn't help me that I'm supposed to be super pro-Patriot because America, and that's just not my thing. So, in this feud, I tend to be a little more like, no, Bret Hart is very reasonable, and you know, maybe moving 2 hours away to Canada isn't the worst choice.
Sunny comes out. She is now going to be doing interviews in the men's locker room. Leave the jokes at home. JR wants a woman's opinion on what Brian Pillman's been saying about Goldust, Marlena, and Dakota. And Sunny sides with Goldust and Marlena. She says, usually, you know, I'd be all about Brian Pillman, but there's a 3-year-old girl involved. And my favorite line is when Sunny went, I mean, I'm a feminist.
I laughed pretty hard at that one too.
Sunny the feminist. Oh, good God. That's like saying Hitler the cake baker. You know, it's like
Sunny
nah.
the feminist who thinks that Sasha Banks and Charlotte are not draws in WWE and shouldn't be, but really loves Lana.
Says it all.
I'm just saying. That was a rant of hers one time.
It takes us into Salvatore Sincere making his return to Monday Night Raw.
Yeah, I had no idea he was still alive.
The annoying thing is, like, he gets a push as a repackaged character in about 3 months, and it's so fucking dull.
Really?
Oh, God.
It's not even bad, like, I'm gonna love it bad. It's just bad.
You may like it. His name's Tom Brandy. Ugh. Brandy with an I.
Oh, wow.
Anyway.
That sounds exciting.
So
it doesn't. Salvatore Sincere versus Goldust.
So Goldust comes out. Marlena comes out. Marlena knows how to wear a dress. She really, I mean, she, like, Marlena really fills out every single part of a dress.
And she does, but didn't this dress look a little more like brown burlap than gold?
Yeah, it wasn't. And then, like, the nipples were on show.
Oh,
I mean,
yes.
They were, like, well, I mean, on they show. Because, like, you never see Sunny's nipples.
No.
In 1997. I mean, for now, 10 on Skype. I mean, you can see a fanny for 15. But anyway, Goldust makes pretty short work of Salvatore Sincere with the curtain call, about 3 minutes. And then post-match, Brian Pillman is in, like, the upper level, and he's kind of screaming at Goldust, saying, you know, he's going to win at Ground Zero, and, you know, talking about Terry and what they're going to do together, and she's going to be his assistant, and much of the same, really.
Much of the same. I think he claims Dakota again, or they showed the video promo package or whatever where, you know, he's like, Dakota's mine and all this stuff. I'm so not into this story, Kenny, which I know is not a shock.
There's more to come.
Anyone who knows me. And I know that there's more to come, and I know it goes bad places, and I just, why? Like, why, wrestling? Why do you need to be this way?
It takes us into, they show us the Steve Austin interview that we saw last week on Raw. It's kind of the same. And they say, next week we're going to hear what the doctors had to say about Steve Austin's neck. Rockabilly's coming out. No Honky Tonk Man.
Couldn't afford Honky Tonk Man on Friday night's main event. Rockabilly's alone.
And he's facing one half of the WWF Tag Team Champions, Dude Love. Dude Love, of course, is easily able to dispose of Rockabilly with sweet shin music and then a double arm DDT for the pin. Afterwards, Jim Ross, who's, you know, getting his cardio on tonight, comes up to interview Dude Love about the status of the Fatal 4-Way at Ground Zero, and Dude Love talks about, you know, he's either with Steve Austin as tag team champion or he's not tag team champion because the dude will not stand alone. And then he said, Stone Cold is like cheap toilet paper, he don't take crap off nobody. Ow, have mercy. And then groupies come and take him away.
Of course they do. Dude Love seems to be finding his groove a little bit more, mm-hmm. Which is nice. I don't understand why you had Dude Love versus Rockabilly in a match when you could have had Dude Love versus Rockabilly in a dance contest.
I do love that. I think it was JR said, or was it Cornette? I think it was Cornette saying, Dude Love dancing doesn't have a lick of rhythm.
And he's not wrong. Like, he's really not wrong. I don't know. For some reason, when you were running down the card for me before I watched this atrocity of a show, I mean, you said Dude Love versus Rockabilly, and I was like, do they dance? Because neither of them
can. They
do
dance.
They do dance, but I just feel like it could have been a dance contest moment and a really fun segment, and instead it was just a match.
That just shows, like, what era of wrestling you come from, where you're like, make it a dance contest.
I come from, you know,
Jim Ross and Michael Cole dance contests.
No. I was thinking Emma versus Summer Rae.
Better.
Amazing. One of the best segments ever.
Shaking my head.
I know you are.
It's we get Sunny's backstage. Her first interview is going to be with Bret Hart. She comes in to ask him for comment. Bret wants to kick her out, but then Owen grabs her and says, listen, what is he calls her? Chicky? Chick, or he calls her something.
I don't remember.
And then he says, you know, go and tell Sergeant Slaughter that I want Steve Austin for a rematch so I can finish his career for good. And then he, like, kicks her out and she, like, runs away. So that was that.
Everyone in the locker room when Sunny's doing these interviews just tends to fondle her.
I'm saying nothing. Second hour kicks off with The Undertaker. At this point, it is 12:45 a.m. So you're not even keeping one of the main event guys for the main event. You're just kicking off hour two with him. Cornette is, like, really, like, egging Undertaker. You know, he's talking about placing him ahead of Andre, or same category as Andre the Giant. Undertaker has a bandage in his forehead to sell the chair shots from 10 days before, or 11 days before, whenever it was. And he talks about, he gives Shawn Michaels credit for being able to swing a chair and talk a lot. And he says the reason they've never had a match is because he was saving Shawn to tell the story of The Undertaker or something.
By the way, if you're The Undertaker and you want someone to tell the story of The Undertaker, you think that Shawn Michaels and all of his drugs is the most reliable narrator? Like, that's what you've been waiting for?
There's a very flawed logic here. Very flawed.
I just don't see that as the best plan.
But he is going to get a shot at Hunter Hearst Helmsley next week, The Undertaker, and he's going to tear him apart and show what's in store for Shawn Michaels at Ground Zero. Shawn Michaels will rest in peace. Very generic promo from Undertaker here. There was, like, it was kind of just like, I think the idea, like, their feuds escalated quite badly, and I was hoping for more from Undertaker here. He does do more at the pay-per-view, thankfully, but yeah, I thought this was a bit too generic, to be honest.
Like, there really hasn't been a lot, and I feel like The Undertaker should be a lot angrier with Shawn Michaels, shouldn't he?
Yeah, after two chair shots to the head.
I mean, I know he's probably still distracted with the threat of Kane and Paul Bearer and that kind of stuff. I think that might be part of the problem, is that The Undertaker is involved in multiple stories, which is good. I like multiple stories happening concurrently because it makes it feel like, you know, like more than one thing can be going on in a performer's life. But the stories are just so disconnected that maybe it just, it doesn't flow very well, and it doesn't help any feud that The Undertaker's in. Because, I mean, it was kind of the same thing with Bret Hart, right? The Undertaker versus Bret Hart didn't really feel like a really great, compelling story about Undertaker versus Bret Hart. It was just The Undertaker happened to be champion. And now The Undertaker just happens to be the guy who was champion and got screwed, and so now they're going to have a match. I don't feel like there's enough response from The Undertaker. He's just talking, you know, in cryptic Undertaker way and not really reacting to what's gone on.
Yeah, we needed more from him here, I think. It takes us into, we have a non-title match between the British Bulldog and Road Warrior Hawk of the Legion of Doom. Always a fun time when LOD and, you know, the Bulldog and Owen get in there. Big brawl. But of course the Godwins have to come out to ruin things, take a closer look. Bulldog throws out Hawk, and then Owen starts kicking him, and then, you know, we go to a break, and we come back, and Owen then blasts Hawk with a European title for the DQ, and then afterwards, LOD are fighting with Owen and Bulldog, while the Godwins just kind of, like, walk away. So the Godwins are just, like, I can't work out, are the Godwins clever for just, like, surveying what's going on? Are we going to give them that credit, or are they just,
no,
like, silly for coming out?
I don't know why they exist. I don't like them. They pretty much just ruin everything. I mean, LOD and Owen and Bulldog can be fun together, but the Godwins just keep popping up, and they're just like the blemish on this thing that could be cool.
Sonny's backstage with Los Barriquas. They returned the bikes they stole from DOA. You know, what's the big deal? Savio says he can't wait to get in the ring with Furukin Crush at Ground Zero. I mean, oh my god, does anyone want to see that triple threat? No.
No.
Nobody. Nope. Nobody wants to see it.
No, because it's going to be terrible. Like, it's going to be really, really terrible. I mean, bless Savio and his passion for, you know, jokily stealing bikes and being like, oh, and we're Barriquas and I'm here with my brothers and we're 100% Barriquas, and what does that even mean? I don't know, but good on you, Savio. Like, whatever. And they were all, this is where they were really fondling Sunny, right? Like, the Barriquas were all like petting her hair, and
she did not seem bothered by this.
No, not at all.
So many comments. We get a tag team match where we get Farouk and Rocky Maivia of the Nation of Domination against Crush and Chains. Now, when you were drunkenly messaging me, you apparently seemed to really not be able to differentiate Crush and Chains.
They look the same, is the problem. So I've always had this problem being able to tell men with beards apart anyway. And Crush and Chains just, like, they look alike. And so I was very pleased when DOA made their entrance to notice that, you know, okay, Chains has his hair down. This is going to be difficult. But at least Chains was wearing a bandana. And then, and Crush wasn't wearing the bandana and he had his tattoo out. So I was like, okay, good. I can just look for the bandana and I will know which one is Chains and know which one is Crush. And then partway through the match, the bandana comes off. And I genuinely thought it was Crush in the ring, but then commentary was calling him Chains, and I was very confused, and that's about all I remember about this match.
I mean, it's so funny to watch this match back, because this is, as far as I'm aware, unless I'm forgetting something, this is the first Rocky Maivia match so far of him in the Nation? He didn't wrestle last week, did he?
I don't think so. Didn't they have that promo?
Yeah, they had the promo, so this is his first match in the Nation. It's just like, I just don't understand how this guy became who he is now. It's just so weird to me. Because it's like, it would be like watching Hulk Hogan in like the 70s. Just being like, he's never going to be big. You know?
Like, I mean, it's a case study and you never know who could make it big, right? Like, well,
it's also a case study in if somebody does something quite well, let them roll with it. And see what happens, which is a good way to go.
It might be similar to watching, you know, stunning Steve Austin or the Ringmaster, especially the Ringmaster, right? Like, would you ever look at the Ringmaster and go, oh, that is going to be the guy who takes this company high to, you know, high places? No, he's the Ringmaster with Ted DiBiase. Like, I feel like that's a very similar thing that we're watching Rocky Maivia, you know, tagging with Farouk against Crush and Chains, because no one in the Nation of Domination, the Bariquas, or DOA can fight anyone outside of the Nation of Domination, the Bariquas, or DOA.
No. Well, what's funny, I think, like, is like, so the biggest reaction the crowd had during this match was Rocky sucks. So at least, like, he is, like, I feel like people want to hate him. So at least that's something.
What I find so interesting about that is, like, before he cut that promo last week when he was talking about, you know, die, Rocky, die and everything, I don't remember the reaction being that strong to him either way. I think he was over-egging, you know, people saying die, Rocky, die, or maybe it was just on one sign or something. But I don't remember the chants ever being very loud before he turned and joined the Nation. So he's actually cultivating the chants, which proves that something he's doing is working.
Yeah, for sure. I think maybe sometimes it's on taped shows and they've just kind of got rid of it when he was a babyface before. I don't know. But, yeah, so we end up getting the Bariquas coming out at the end. They start kind of, you know, wailing at Crush, which, of course, this is just, like, the biggest DQ show of all time.
Yes.
Like, Vader, Bret Hart, DQ. Owen and Bulldog and Hawk, DQ. I mean, there was two squash matches with Goldust and did love getting wins, but you know what I mean? And then now this tag match, DQ. And then we get this 12-man brawl, and everybody comes out to try and break it up. Sergeant Slaughter, the referees, the agents, and that's it.
It was chaos aplenty, just like these, you know, faction warfare is always chaos aplenty. It never really progresses, right? Because we don't know what they're fighting for. We don't know why they're all fighting each other. Other than, you know, Savio and Crush used to be in the Nation and now they're not. So they just want to fight the leader of the Nation with their own factions, I guess. But it's just three teams that just constantly fight. And for some reason, it's always pretty enjoyable, but it never progresses anything. There's no point to it.
Part of the reason it's enjoyable is because it never lasts very long. So
yeah,
it's
that
like,
helps.
Brawl! And then they leave.
And then there are motorcycles too.
There are motorcycles. We get the Stridex Slam of the Week, which is always a good time when Stridex turns up. But it takes us into Taka Michinoku taking on Jerry Lynn, future ECW champion. They have probably the best match on the show, to be honest.
Probably it's the best match on the show. Like, I mean, Bret Hart versus Vader was good, but this is the best match on the show. This was enjoyable.
Yeah, there's good stuff, you know, like Lynn's doing like a set of powerbomb, Taka's doing flying moonsaults, and in the end, Taka gets the Michinoku driver, gets the win. Jerry Lynn doesn't get a spot on the WWF roster, but what's interesting this time as well is behind the scenes is the great Sasuke, or the great Sasuke, or however the fuck you want to pronounce
Sasuke,
his name.
Don't be like them.
I mean, it reads like the great Sasuke, but then Asuka doesn't read like Asuka, so, you know, there's
no,
there's
because
problem.
That's, you know, the pronunciation of things in Japanese is different.
So, wait, I'm not Japanese, love, so, you know, I'm not going to, anyway. So, the great Sasuke, WWF keep trying to sign him. So his thing is he's willing to be signed if they give him The Undertaker for one of his Japanese shows, and they're just like, no. You are not worth an Undertaker to us. And then Paul Heyman has asked Vince if he can use the Great Sasuke for a pay-per-view in November, and Vince McMahon basically gives him the impression of, well, we're not going to sign him now, so yeah, go ahead. So, no great Sasuke, and rumours had started also rumbling at this point that there was going to be a minis match at Ground Zero, which there does end up being, so we get that coming soon.
I'm pretty excited about that.
Sonny's backstage again, speaking to the Truth Commission. The Commandant's men are going to... they basically all want to fuck Sonny, but the Commandant doesn't really want them to fuck Sonny. He wants his men to be disciplined, which, you know, a man with a cane saying he wants all his men to be disciplined kind of keeps up with the theme of this show, which is...
It really, really does.
I mean, this show just seems to be a gay porno movie at various points. Patriot doesn't want to see him get triple teamed. You know, there's a lot going on, a lot of euphemisms, but it leads us into, and you know, I need to call this the main event because it's the last thing on the show, so it's the main event.
It is the main event of the show.
Sniper and Recon of the fucking Truth Commission, fucking terrible faction that they are.
When they came out, Mr. Sandra came into the room and he goes, "Wait, what are they called?" And I was like, "The Truth Commission." And he goes, "Those are white South African men and it's called the Truth Commission." And I was like, "Yep, it is that terrible. It is that terrible indeed." And he was just so baffled by this and was like, "How the fuck are they doing this?" I was like, "I don't know. I don't know what's going on. It is horrible. It is the worst."
But aren't you glad that you now understand these very niche references of, like, the Truth Commission?
Yes, I really am. And I mean, they're named Recon and Sniper. And when you were telling me the card, I was like, what's the Interrogator doing on the outside of this match the whole time? Just hanging about being tall? Turns out I was right. He just hangs out about on the outside being tall and is the Interrogator. I don't know why any of this is happening. Like,
and the poor fucking headbangers. The headbangers are going to be in this fucking... this is not a spoiler. Dude Love and Steve Austin do not wrestle at Ground Zero.
No, we know that.
And the headbangers are put in the match instead. So why the fuck are we having...
Are they fighting the Truth Commission?
No, they're in the four-way.
No, I mean, like, just on Friday night's main event. Yeah, exactly. Was this supposed to make the headbangers look amazing?
But it's just an awful, awful idea. Like, especially if you're like, oh, well, you know, the headbangers are the team that we might put in the four-way if Austin and Dude Love can't wrestle. I'll tell you what we'll do. We'll have them just get killed by the Truth Commission on Raw.
Yep. Yeah, because the Truth Commission win, right?
Yep, Recon rolls up Mosh, I think.
I don't know.
One of them. And get the win in about 4.5 minutes. I mean, that's the only good thing I can say is at least it was only 4.5 minutes. And the Truth Commission are just so fucking excited that they've won a match against, like, a team.
Yeah, against a team. That is accurate. Like, I remember, even
in 1997, I was like, these guys are terrible.
Like, they're very bad.
They actually had action figures, which is baffling to me.
I want one.
I don't think they had the Interrogator. I think it was just Recon and Sniper in a two-pack. But, yeah. I mean, the fact that the Beverly Brothers don't have action figures and the fucking Truth Commission do is a travesty of figure justice.
It really is.
This show is a thumbs down.
Yes. It is a vehement thumbs down from me. None of it made any sense. It probably didn't help that I started watching it way too late at night. But I don't think if I had watched it during the day and sober that I would have had any better experience watching Friday night's main event. It I think the alcohol helped me get through it, to be honest, especially as it just sort of devolved as the show went on. I mean, starting with Bret Hart versus Vader, you're like, oh, that's a pretty fun title match, right? But to be main evented, and you know my fascination with the Truth Commission, obviously. I'm like, yes, Truth Commission, bring it on, because they're so terrible and everything about them is just the worst. But like, the Truth Commission versus the Headbangers is the main event of your show. Salvatore Sincere versus Goldust, you thought that was a fine idea? Like, just why? It meant I had to look at Goldust in that gear for, you know, 2 minutes, and I didn't like it.
Who would have thought that we'd be seeing Goldust in that gear 20 years later on Raw?
He looks better in it now, but it's still disturbing. His penis is still right out there. Like, who thinks that this is a good idea?
Okay, let me add to a previous question I asked you on a Patreon podcast. So instead of being given the choice of Vince or Lawler, Vince, Lawler, or Goldust?
Goldust.
Jesus.
100%.
So that's,
I mean, still, ew, but at least he seems like a decent guy.
So that is it for the first of two episodes of Friday Night's Main Event. If you are listening to this on Podomatic or iTunes or whatever, in the description link there is a private YouTube video where you can watch this episode. Go check it out. Do not share it around to people, please. We have it as a private link. I mean, share it to people who want to listen to the podcast, but don't be like, you know, we don't want it taken down. So, yeah, that'll be there. And then next week we're back with a second bonus episode where we cover the September 5th episode of Friday Night's Main Event, where we have The Undertaker versus Hunter Hearst Helmsley, The Patriot versus Owen Hart, and Sonny trying to grab a word with Rick Rude.
Oh, boy.
And I'm pretty positive that we have another fucking Truth Commission main event. I'm sure of it.
Really?
I'm absolutely positive.
Oh, man, why? Like,
okay, here we go.
Why?
Here's the card for next week. We open with the Patriot versus Owen Hart. We have the British Bulldog versus Dude Love. That's quite good. The Undertaker versus Hunter Hearst Helmsley. Okay. The Legion of Doom versus Los Boricuas.
Wow.
Ken Shamrock.
That's such a deviation. I'm shocked.
Ken Shamrock versus Salvatore Sincere.
The murder of Salvatore Sincere will be probably more satisfying this week than you know, the previous one.
Scott Putski versus Steve Casey.
Oh, for fuck's sake, why?
And the main event is a 2-on-1 handicap match with the jobber team of Sonny Rogers and Jerry Fox going 2-on-1 against...
The Interrogator?
The Interrogator.
Wow.
And our commentary team for next week, from Chicago, is Jim Ross and not Jim Cornette, but your favourite, Sandra, it is going to be Jim Ross and Doc Hendricks.
Oh, for fuck's sake, this is going to be terrible. Ugh.
Get the beers
in. Things I do for you people. Things I do for you people. I signed up to watch every episode of Raw. Not every episode of Friday Night's Main Event. Every episode of Raw. But I'm watching this fucking show, so never say I didn't do anything. For the lovely listeners of Inside the Ropes, for fuck's sake.
So with that in mind, thank you for listening, everybody. Sandra, where can people find you on Twitter?
Find me on Twitter, share in my misery, at SandraRuthRW. Find Kenny on Twitter at KennyMC1985, and follow Inside the Ropes at Inside_the Ropes. If you want to hear us talk about retro pay-per-views, including In Your House Ground Zero coming up on, what, September 7, I think?
Yep, September 7th.
Patreon.com/InsideTheRopes. I'm sure we will have thoughts.
Lots and lots of thoughts. Luckily, I watched Ground Zero back about a year ago, just before we actually started doing Retro Raw, and I remember quite enjoying it. So, Ground Zero is not anywhere near as bad a time as
Friday Night's Main Event.
I mean, that's like saying, you know, anything's better than syphilis, but, you know.
I mean, seriously, this is basically Shotgun Saturday Night just expanded to 2 hours to make my life worse.
Actually, to be fair, I think Shotgun Saturday Night is better. Actually, yeah. I'm going to prove this. Hang on. Right, hold on.
Shotgun Saturday Night was more bonkers, so I enjoyed that about it.
Hold on 1 second. Okay, so what this was... I'm trying to find the results for Shotgun Saturday Night. So we can see what was a worst...
What, from the first episode?
No, from the ones that are on like right now.
Oh.
Okay, here we go. August 23rd, 1997, which was the previous Shotgun Saturday Night to this show, had three matches. It had Owen Hart and the British Bulldog against Dude Love and Goldust, Rocky Maivia versus Flash Funk, and the Headbangers versus Rockabilly and Salvatore Sincere. Immediately a better show. The August 30th episode of Shotgun Saturday Night. Two matches. I mean, this is not good, to be fair. The Godwins against Flash Funk and Jesse James. That's bad.
Ugh.
And Tiger Ali Singh with the Iron Sheik in a jobber match.
So I mean, Tiger Ali Singh is actually... Because we've never seen Tiger Ali Singh on Raw other than in the crowd, right?
No.
We saw that contract signing that one time, and then he's been in the crowd with his dad.
Yeah.
Okay.
So there you go.
Waiting on that big Raw debut for Tiger Ali Singh, I suppose. Still waiting for Brackus.
You've been waiting a long time.
I know.
Thank you for listening, everyone. Have a good week, and we will be back next Tuesday with more shitey Friday Night's Main Event. Bye.
Bye.